Welcome to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and by word of mouth. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour with engineer Mike Murphy. There are Local Talk guests in the wings, so to speak, on Zoom. Well, the full slate of for your enjoyment and information from our fair city. The weather will be another field of dreams perfect day with a high of 85 and a low this evening of 61. Lower 80s for the weekend and very nice into next week with possible rain in the forecast for next Thursday. Let's welcome Dennis Hart, who works so wonderfully at gathering the news for this week from the pages of our local newspaper.
There was plenty of news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's start with last Friday's paper, which reported that Iowans were continuing their pandemic-era rush to state parks, and that resident hunting license sales are the highest they've been in 3 years. But some fishing license sales have been below last year, when pandemic restrictions made lakes and rivers some of the few places where people could safely be out of their home. State Department of Natural Resources records show that Iowans have logged more than 7.5 million visits to state parks this year through June 30th. That's about 2% higher than last year's pace. There was also word that a federal judge had decided to allow a lawsuit to continue over the effects of coronavirus mitigation measures on students' educational experiences at a pair of Iowa colleges. But parts of the original complaints have been dismissed against Wartburg College in Waverly and St. Ambrose University in Davenport. At both cases, lawsuits were filed claiming that coronavirus measures had denied students the educational experience they had paid for. There was also word that school will start about 1 week later than had been planned for students in the Colo Nesco district. The reason? Construction has not been completed on the Colo building. School there was supposed to start by August 26th, but now it won't begin until September 7th. Saturday's paper brought word that Betty Lou Varnum, who had hosted the long-running children's TV show The House with the Magic Window on WOI-TV, had died. She was 90 years old. Varnum started hosting the show in 1954, when WOI was based in Ames and was owned by Iowa State University. She hosted it for 40 years, making it the longest-running locally produced children's TV show in the nation. The show's format changed very little over the decades. It was set in a house in the Magic Forest where Varnum did crafts and enjoyed visits from such friends as Katrina the Witch, who had turned herself into a crocodile, Gregory the Lion, and Dusty the Unicorn. She would also show a cartoon. Betty Lou's husband Red was the voice and puppeteer behind Gregory and Dusty. Betty Lou Varnum, dead at the age of 90. Last Saturday's paper also reported that Des Moines School Superintendent Tom Ahart will start the new academic year with a letter of reprimand from the state's Education Licensing Agency. That's a symbolic slap on the wrist after district officials defied the state last fall, keeping students online and out of classrooms amidst the coronavirus pandemic. The paper also reported that a group called the Caravanners, associated with the Heart of Iowa Habitat for Humanity, is in Boone to help build a house. The Caravanners are camping out at the Boone County Fairgrounds. The Heart of Iowa Habitat serves Boone, Greene, and Guthrie counties. It has built 30 homes in the area since 1995. The new one in Boone is on 6th Street. And there was word that Adele's popular Sweet Corn Festival will return today and tomorrow. The annual festival typically brings in between 10,000 and 12,000 people a year. Today, there will be a community corn shucking event, followed by the Sweet Corn Princess Contest. Tomorrow, there will be a 5K run and walk, a parade, activities for kids, a street party, and free sweet corn. Sunday's Trib reported that the United States was averaging 100,000 new coronavirus cases a day, returning to a milestone last seen during last winter's surge. Most of that increase is due to the Delta variant of the virus, which has spread throughout the nation. Health officials worried that cases, hospitalizations, and deaths will continue to go up if more Americans don't get the coronavirus vaccine. Nationwide, 50% of U.S. residents are fully vaccinated, and more than 70% of adults have received at least one dose. The Trib also reported that Story City will lose its local grocery store on August 23rd. David and Wendy Wooldridge planned to close the Story City market then, 4 years after they bought it. They said the coronavirus pandemic, the arrival of Dollar General, and nearby cities' grocery chains have forced them to close after years of work with little financial gain. Story City Mayor Mike Jensen said conversations with different companies that could bring a new grocery store to town are progressing. The issues that Story City Market faced are not unique to the town. Iowa lost almost half its grocery stores from 1995 to 2005, according to the Center for Rural Affairs. 43% of Iowa towns under 1,000 in population lost their grocery stores. The Trib also reported that an endangered bee had been found in Ames. It's known as the rusty-patched bumblebee. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service placed that bumblebee on the endangered species list in 2017. It's the only bee species in the continental United States to be put on that list. The species had declined 87% in the past 20 years, a decline caused by the loss of its habitat, pesticide use, and pathogens. And there was word that Iowa State University's exhibit at this year's State Fair includes a Lego version of George Washington Carver. He was the first black student and faculty member at ISU and became an innovator in agriculture, creating hundreds of new products from peanuts, sweet potatoes, and other plants. Carver's Lego figure will be built of about 44,000 Lego bricks, and you can see it in the Varied Interest Building at the fair today through August 22nd. And after the fair, the statue will be put on display on the ISU campus at a spot that has not been determined. Tuesday's Trib reported that a man had been arrested in connection with a house fire in Ames that caused about $75,000 in damages. 39-year-old Michael William McPeak was charged with arson and criminal mischief in connection with a fire in the 1400 block of Meadow Lane Avenue. He was living there but did not own the property. Authorities said he started the fire last Saturday afternoon to draw attention to an ongoing child custody dispute. The fire was found in the back of the house, and there was heavy smoke and fire damage. No one was injured. There was also an update on the damage caused by that derecho windstorm in Iowa and other Midwestern states a year ago. It caused more than $11 billion damage along its 770-mile course from South Dakota and Nebraska to Ohio. Iowa families and businesses have filed 225,000 claims for $3 billion in damage. That does not include the $562 million that Iowa farmers claimed through federal crop insurance for damage to corn, soybeans, and other crops caused by the drought and other extreme weather last year. And there was word about something scheduled to take place in Ames this past Tuesday night. The Community Arts Festival was putting on a behind-the-scenes tour of Stevens Auditorium, followed by a singer-songwriter concert. Construction of Stevens was finished in 1969, followed by the completion of the Hilton Coliseum in 1971, the Fisher Theater in 1974, and the Scheman Building in 1975. 2 years ago, USA Today named Stevens one of the most amazing university and college buildings in the nation. After Tuesday night's tour of Stevens, a concert featuring singer-songwriters Reggie Greenlaw of Ames and John Richardson of Coon Rapids was scheduled. Wednesday's paper reported that the Story County Board of Supervisors had reinstated mask mandates for employees and visitors to county buildings after the area was listed among those with a high risk of transmission of the coronavirus. Story County is one of 90 Iowa counties with high or substantial transmission rates of the virus. All visitors over the age of 2 on Story County property will need to wear a face covering. On Tuesday, the 14-day positivity rate for the virus was 8.3% in the county. The Trib also reported that school leaders in Boone were preparing to deal with the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. The school board president said he's recommending that students wear face masks. The school year is set to begin August 23rd. The district will not be offering an online learning option for this coming school year. There was also word that the state of Iowa had started tossing out tens of thousands of expiring coronavirus vaccine doses as demand for the shots continued to decline. As of Monday, the state had discarded more than 81,000 doses of the vaccine. Federal officials said states could not return unused vaccines to the manufacturers or donate them to other states or counties. Yesterday's paper brought word that 96 more cases of the coronavirus had been confirmed in Story County. That brought the total number of cases in the county to 11,021 since the pandemic started. The county's 14-day positivity rate was 8.3%. There was also word that more than 500 people, mostly University of Iowa faculty members, had signed a petition to the State Board of Regents, the governing body for the state's three public universities, asking for stronger coronavirus mitigation strategies at the university. The fall semester is scheduled to start August 23rd at the U of I, Iowa State University, and the University of Northern Iowa. But Johnson County is now categorized as having substantial transmission of the coronavirus based on a tracker used by the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The U of I is the only university within the Big Ten Athletic Conference that does not have a mask requirement. There was also a story that an uptick of coronavirus cases is causing longer wait times at the Boone County Hospital's walk-in clinic. And the chairman of the Boone County Board of Health said the spread of the virus in Boone might have been increased over the weekend with the Pufferbilly celebration. The Trib also reported that the Ames City Council had approved a $3 million budget to support low-income housing in Ames. The council approved the Community Block Development Grant and Home Budget that includes rental assistance, home down payment assistance, existing structure improvements and rehabilitation, and more. Some community advocates argued that the program does not address some key issues. And the Trib reported that progress is being made on construction taking place at the Colonesco School District buildings. The district has pushed back the start date for classes in the district from August 26 to September 7th to accommodate that construction. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, happy to have been with you on this Friday, and also happy that the weekend is almost here. I'll be back bright and early on Monday morning at 7 on Local Talk, when I'll report on what's been making news around Iowa. And yes, there's been a whole lot of that. Between now and Monday, have a great weekend.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News, and the music interlude was by The Doors. Hyacinth House from the year 1971, 50 years ago from their album L.A. Woman. I can't remember what I had for dinner 5 days ago, yet I can remember hearing this album for the first time in spring 1971 in Colonial Heights, Virginia. Excellent guitar work there by Robbie Krieger. Yeah, a rather overlooked member of the Doors, with Ray Manzarek and on organ and John Densmore. Percussion and, of course, Jim Morrison, who died later that year at 27. And here at KHOI Community Radio, we're always looking for a brand new friend. And the best way to become a brand new friend to the station is to become a member by going to the website khoifm.org. And from time to time, we have Carolyn Raffensperger, a good friend to the station, the director of the Science and Environmental Health Network. Welcome to Local Talk.
Yes. Glad to be here.
So great to hear your voice. And you have been providing insights into the dilemma that we faced initially with COVID, gosh, over a year and so many months ago. Where are we at with COVID in Carolyn Raffensperger's world? And I hope you touch on some of these variant issues.
I think we see nature doing what nature does, which is evolve and change and have its way with the human world. So not that they're separate. And the other thing about COVID is that it is one of several crises we're facing here in Iowa. And yesterday, the IPCC, the International Panel on Climate Change, issued its report, its sixth report on climate. You can't separate out COVID from the climate problem that we're facing. What we're in the middle of is a polycrisis, multiple crises that are converging. And what we see is that humans have done a lot of damage to the natural world. Huge amount of damage. And the probability that COVID is a zoonotic disease, a disease that an animal in the natural world carries in and can transmit to humans. So we've got lots of them in Iowa. We've got insect-borne diseases that ticks or mosquitoes can bring. And when we disrupt that natural world, what we get is trouble. And I think that we're seeing that both in the IPCC's report and in COVID, both. So that's what I'm seeing from my window. And it's pretty close to the anniversary of the derecho, when we suffered very strong winds. And here we are, a year later, going through a drought, going through still more COVID, which is changing quickly, affecting more vulnerable populations, and here we are. What are we going to do now?
Well, it does seem good to point out that, gosh, just a few months ago, first part of mid-spring, we were hoping to put this COVID issue behind us. Where are we at with that projection right now today, you feel?
So what I feel is probably irrelevant. And what I know is that nature, that this virus will surprise us. And at the same time, we have the tools and the capacity to stop it. It will require an organized and concerted effort by the community. And we have the power to stop this and to protect each other through a couple of ways. You can get vaccinated or not, but then you should stay home. You should stay in your own, you know, where you cannot get it, where you cannot transmit it. Mm-hmm. You should wear a mask. We know that a mask is the simplest thing we can do to prevent inhaling the droplets, the aerosols that carry the virus, mm-hmm. and it prevents it from, if we have it, from spreading. We can do simple things like that. And, you know, the thing about it is I can often be so critical of Iowa, just angry and upset. But I want to tell you a piece of good news that gives me the sense, the hope that we can actually make a difference in this polycrisis. And that is that Iowa is leading the nation in the amount of renewable energy used per capita. 58% of our electricity is provided through renewable resources, wind and solar. This means that we're not using coal. We're not using other really destructive technologies. That is a piece of good news. And we can look at how we did that, and we can apply that same kind of step-by-step solutions to COVID, that we have the power to stop that virus, and address climate. We have the capacity to do that. Mm-hmm. And when you have politicians and others who stop us from using all the tools we've got to protect public health, then we have a political problem. We don't so much have a disease problem.
Boy, you corrected me there. It may be a Freudian slip when I ask you, how do you feel about that? You went right to, no, let's focus on what we know. Let's look at is that a result of being a scientist, that your beliefs are based on what you know rather than what you feel?
I don't use the word belief almost ever. And the reason is that in this country, we've made what you believe the measure of whether you're a good person or not. So if you believe in God, if you believe in climate change, then you're a good person. If you don't believe that climate change is humanly caused, then you're a bad person to an environmentalist. So belief is not something that, to me, is relevant. What is relevant to me is what your experience is, what you know. And my guess is that every listener out there has a different experience around COVID-19. You may have had a relative who got it, did well, didn't get sick, didn't go to the hospital. You may have had someone die of it. You may have small children who live with a grandparent. Your calculus is different, and your experience is different. What you believe may guide some of this. But what I've seen is that most people, and I know some people who are anti-vaxxers, and when I've asked them their reason, they have given me a logical reason based on their experience, based on what they're reading and knowing. And so I'm interested in what people's experience is. What's your experience of the weather rather than what do you believe about it? Mm-hmm. And I don't go to belief. Mm-hmm. And my feelings about it are probably often shared, anger, sorrow, anxiety about the future. And unless I've got an offering to make about how I cope with that in the face of everything that I know, I owe it to your listeners, our listeners, to bring some wisdom. And if I don't have any wisdom to share on it, I'm going to pass.
Thanks for wordsmithing the term belief. And that's very valuable insights. But is there anything else, Carolyn? Again, this is not in a rearview mirror, apparently, and COVID is still with us, and it's acting like a virus does. Did I read where there's a Lambda variant now beyond the Delta?
Yes. Yeah. So what we can expect is that there will be many, many, many variants, especially if we don't stop this. The longer it goes on, the more we're going to have variants. So we have variants on the flu. Every year, the pharmaceutical industry tries to predict what the flu strain will be and develop a vaccine for that. And what we know is that now that this is widespread, people who have been vaccinated can get it. Children who are not vaccinated are certainly at risk, and the unvaccinated are really at risk. That means that this has an opportunity to change very quickly and can go in many directions. It could die out. It has in some other countries. That's the Delta variant. But we don't know with future variants. So my biggest concern right now is that we're not going to stop this disease because we have so many people unvaccinated, especially children. That's not their choice. That's the way the world is right now. We don't know that the vaccine is safe for a small child. So I worry about that and concerned about that. And that means that this can change very quickly. So Delta is itself a worrisome variant. There may be a more worrisome variant that causes higher mortality, that is even more infectious. And we owe it to ourselves, our families, our community to stop it now. We owe it. We don't think well in this country about public health, how what happens to me actually affects you. If I have COVID because I was careless or or not. I was just exposed in a situation I couldn't help. If I meet you for a cup of coffee, I bring a risk to you. That's public health. Public health is the health and disease that sits between us. And what we know is that our politics right now are as much a part of public health as any decisions made by a doctor or a pharmaceutical company. We know that politics are driving some of the things that we now see on the ground, both with climate and with COVID-19. Mm-hmm. We're in for a wild ride.
We're in for a wild ride because a virus is being a virus, and almost our human nature is causing us to come up short.
Well, I think I'm not sure that that's true. So what we see in a couple of states, is including Iowa, is a prohibition against mask mandates in schools. So where does that takes away a public health tool? It doesn't mean, I'm not advocating that every school should require masks for everyone, unless they've got a big spread of COVID. Mm-hmm. But if you've got the situation we're in now, Texas, Florida, and Iowa, prohibiting masks is an irrational decision. It is bad public policy, and it's going to come back to bite us.
Carolyn Raffensperger, Director of the Science and Environmental Health Network. Good day.
Good day. Thanks for letting me participate.
Okay. Thank you, Carolyn, for another healthy discussion concerning life on the planet in this 21st century. I hope you caught her point about beliefs and how she doesn't use the term. In the native Yankton Nation, with those folks, I've heard it said, do not go on beliefs because your mind will fool itself, as the word lie is a part of the word belief. That's from the Yankton community. This is KHOY's Local Talk, and let's have some music and a little more of The Doors this day.
Tell all the people that you see, follow me. Follow me down. Tell all the people that you see, set them free. Follow me down. You tell them they don't have to run. We're gonna pick up at your feet, your life's complete. Follow me down. Can't you see me growing? Get your guns. The time has come to follow me down. Follow me across the sea where milky babies seem to be molded, flowing revelry. The one that set them free. Tell all the people that you see, it's just me. Follow me down. People that you see, follow me. Follow me down. Tell all the people that you see, we'll be free. Follow me down. Tell all the people that you see, it's just me.
Yes, tell all the people. This is KHOY Community Radio's Local Talk, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum today with our engineer, Mike Murphy. Let's welcome Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director for the Iowa State University and the City of Ames. And let's tell all the people about Rummage Rampage, Mary.
Pat, oh my goodness, what a whirlwind of 9 days we just finished here in the city with Rummage Rampage. And I have, one of my partners in sustainability here related to Rummage Rampage, Bill Schmidt, is joining us this morning. Thanks so much, Bill.
Good morning. Glad to be here. It was a long event, but it was so productive. So glad we were able to do it this year.
Absolutely. Pat, you know, as I think our listeners have heard, because I know Bill had joined you early in the event to talk about Rummage Rampage, but this is an event that really is focused on all of those items that we find that we don't necessarily need in our own homes, and particularly those items that as students are leaving Iowa State to go pursue their careers and all of the aspirations they have for the difference they want to make in their future, that they can't take certain items with them.
Yeah.
And so we really thought, let's find an outlet for that, because these are not beneficial materials to go into our refuse-derived fuel system to become energy from our waste. And so that's how the event was born.
And the tonnage that is not going to the landfill is really astounding. Have you got some of those figures, Bill Schmidt? And welcome, the resource recovery superintendent, Bill Schmidt.
Great to be here. We don't have final tonnage figures, but we certainly have a lot of numbers that we indicate what we took in. For instance, we took in 105 couches and sofa sleepers during the event. We took in 120 upholstered chairs, over 100 tables, dining room, office and chairs. We were over 260, 220 coffee end type tables, and over probably close to 70 different desks. It just amazes me every year, as you say, how much material people bring in. And the vast majority is very good, usable material, as Mary talked about, trying to find homes for these items so that they can be used for the rest of their useful life rather than just disposed of and put into a landfill. It's so encouraging to be able to find these items and put them to good use.
Absolutely. Repurposing and finding new homes for useful items around the household. In comparison to previous years, I guess it's good to point out that there was somewhat of a backlog and that unfortunately not be able to occur last year due to the COVID restraints. But how did it compare with like 2019?
2019, I think we're going to be just a little bit under total pounds of what we rehomed in 2019. 2019 was just such a fantastic year. We were on such a roll. It was the fourth year in a row of the event. Really had a tremendous amount of community support. The community really volunteers to work at the event. Uh-huh. They really look at items they've got that they can bring and they can donate. And then, of course, shopping at the event, which is fantastic because the proceeds from the event that are raised go to all those nonprofits that volunteer at the event. So it's a fantastic opportunity to not only talk about sustainability and get people thinking about how they can be more sustainable in lives, but also to help support a lot of our nonprofits in the area with the emissions that they have.
I was just going to add that I think that a couple of ways that we look at how we divert material sort of is interesting to note here. Usually it's by weight. And, of course, that's what we weigh across the scales. But for anyone who was at the event, I think the event felt very full, in fact, maybe fuller than in past years, which brings attention to us getting a lot of items that didn't necessarily weigh a lot, but still, you know, were taking, you know, taking space and being available to individuals. As far as more, you know, plastic items, smaller items, a lot more of those felt like that they were at the event. And I think that even though maybe our tonnage shows it was a little smaller. I think that just also shows maybe that we got different types of items in as well.
There's kind of an interesting history. Was it 2016?
Yes, 2016.
So who had the foresight to realize the potential of an event such as the Rummage Rampage?
Well, when I remember our first discussions about Rummage Rampage, I have to give credit to Lori Hansen, who had been speaking to or maybe been at Iowa City and noticed their Rummage in the Ramp event and said, gosh, we should do something like that here in Ames. And it took us a few years to sort of get our heads around how exactly would we do that. We thought it was a great event, a little different than Iowa City. Our event is definitely a little different than Iowa City's, but I think it's been a good fit. Now, Bill, you'll have to remind my memory. Is that how you remember the story?
Yes, it was just one of those things that we were talking about at Resource Recovery during that time of the year, that during the summer when the leases are changing over. We were seeing our volume coming into the plant more than double. And that double wasn't usable materials. Mary talked about it. It's stuff that does not make a good fuel for the power plant. It causes us problems in processing and handling the material. And in logistics, the vast majority of it, when we get couches and furniture and like that, we cannot make fuel out of it. The power plant can't use it. So we end up loading it into a roll-off and hauling over to Boone. It takes a lot of time and effort. And if we thought if there was a way to encourage people to reuse items, to rehome them, rather than just disposing of them, it would be beneficial for the environment, for the power plant, and also for us for operations. As you talked about it, that first year we had, in my mind, we had the lower level, and I thought if we could get that half full, that would be fantastic. We started taking items at noon on Friday, and by 2 o'clock, that lower level was full, and we were going around the corner and on up the ramp. But I was going, I don't know what we're going to do with all this stuff. I don't know if anybody's going to come and buy this stuff. I was getting a little nervous. I was, you know, wondering what's going to happen, but it just all fell together so well with such fantastic volunteers. We've had some agencies that have been with us since the beginning, and they've just been such a... I was talking to someone the other day, and I said, you know, I'm amazed at the amount of volunteers and community support. And then I said, I shouldn't be amazed, because that's just the way that they respond and how they accept and how they really support events like this.
I love it. You're establishing an Ames tradition that's pretty much unique to the Ames Resource Recovery Plant, that when you can look at just a simple matter of number of items that are diverted to stay in the community, to help out the community, rather than end up in the landfill. It's just nothing short of amazing.
Well, and I would mention, too, you know, I can't imagine from Bill's team standpoint of seeing all these really wonderfully, barely used or just gently used items coming in, and the heartbreak of saying, oh my gosh, I know there's somebody that could use these. We just can't necessarily make that connection. And now we're able to do that, which is so rewarding on so many levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess it kind of distills down to when I was a student, we had about everything we owned could fit into a car or a pickup truck. And so that was always kind of my standard of, I've got too much stuff if I can't move more than a truck full. But I know there's a lot of international students. I mean, even just the vehicle to drive these items away just don't exist in this modern 21st century learning experience that young people are so involved with. So kudos to the Rummage Rampage. Absolutely. Keep up the good work. And before I go into maybe another question, is there anything else about that I'm overlooking on your Rummage Rampage?
Well, Pat, I would say, just to reiterate what Bill mentioned, that this is really as successful as it is because the community embraces this event. you know, the city and the university put together the infrastructure for the event to take place. Mm-hmm. And it's only successful because our community embraces donating, yeah, shopping, and volunteering. And Pat, I mean, since we have a little bit of time, I wondered if you would mind if I listed off the 28 nonprofit organizations.
Oh, beautiful. Sure.
That assisted us this year.
Sure.
Okay, if they're all on the City of Ames website. And all of them also are hyperlinked, so you can learn more about the organization. But just to give people an indication of those wonderful organizations that assisted us. So first of all, Access, which of course is the Assault Care Center, extending shelter and support. Alpha Delta Kappa, Alpha Pi Omega, which at Iowa State is an ISU student organization. Altruce International of Ames. Ames Community Theater Actors, Ames Evening Lions Club, the Ames History Museum, Ballard Community Performing Arts Association, the Campus Town Action Association, Chi-Phi, which is an Iowa State student organization, the Collegiate United Methodist Church Sending to Serve Cluster, Friendship Arc, Fuel Story County, the International Student Council, which of course is an Iowa State student organization as well. KHOI, Community Radio, is a part of our wonderful nonprofits this year. Legal Aid Society of Story County, Mainstream Living, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, here in Central Iowa. Orchestras Dance Company, which is another Iowa State student organization. The Outdoor Alliance of Story County, Peterson Squadron Air Force ROTC, an Iowa State student organization, Prairie Flower Children's Center, Raising Readers of Story County, Rare Disease Awareness Club, another Iowa State student organization, Stupka, also an Iowa State student organization, another Iowa State student organization, Sustainable Agriculture Student Association, and the Green Umbrella, also an ISU student organization, and finally, the Unity Church of Ames. So a huge thank you to all of those volunteers who worked so diligently and so hard to make this event so successful. And I think what maybe Bill didn't mention is that even though we maybe got a little less tonnage this year than, you know, we're projecting than we did in 2019, we did exceed our proceeds raised for the event. At over $40,000 this year.
Oh, oh, how nice. Yeah, that's right. There was a dollar figure there that is going to go so far in bolstering the Ames community, because that's money that just stays right here. It doesn't go away. It gets amplified, multiplied. And here at KHOI, you know, Lynn Carey is our board chairperson, and with Ursula Rudenberg, and they put together a cadre of volunteers, and she gave of herself, you know, in a beautiful manner. So kudos to Lynn Carey here at KHOI. But I'm thinking every one of those organizations has a key individual that brings their energy, and it's we're almost a synergy then of more than just one plus one creates more than two. It kind of gets amplified in a really beautiful manner. So thank you for that.
Yeah, and I would just also say that the event is like family, you know, from year to year. It's like a family reunion. It's getting together with, you know, those that you just adore and you develop relationships with and you have that camaraderie with. Rummage Rampage is not an easy volunteer opportunity, but an extremely rewarding one. Mm-hmm. And you bond, you know, you learn about each other. You learn about the, you know, wonderful, unique qualities and things that organizations are involved in and what they've accomplished in the community. And it does just have a certain energy and synergy around it that I think continues through the year.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, what a positive discussion you're providing. So you've had a week. You're kind of catching up. Cut your breath, I presume, and looking towards the future. What's in store for Mary Rankin and Bill Schmidt here in the coming weeks and months of autumn?
I'm still recovering.
Oh, okay.
Still getting caught up on sleep, getting caught up on all the emails I missed while I was at the event. But we actually met yesterday to kind of have a discussion about the event, what went well, what maybe we could change, and pull in some of the volunteers that have been at the event for a number of years in the next couple of weeks to have a conversation with them. Because we're always looking at how we can improve the event, how we can make it run a little more smoothly. I mean, even though it's a rummage type sale, garage sale, we still want the shoppers to have a good experience. We still want items to be accessible where people can see them and purchase them. And we're always looking at ways that we can improve that. And it just amazes me how well people really want the event to succeed. And as Mary talked a little bit about the atmosphere at the event, people are happy, they're upbeat. I've worked at the cash table a few times taking money. And a number of people, you know, maybe they ended up buying $11, $12 worth of stuff. They would give a $20 bill and they would say, keep the change. No. You know, we want it's going to nonprofits and we're happy for that. And we want to donate to those organizations. So it's just people have such a wonderful, wonderful attitude at the event.
Yeah. This brings to mind a saying my father pointed out, that if it pleases the eye, it'll please the heart. And the money is soon to follow.
I like that. That's great.
Okay. I'll put it on a placard and put it by the cash register next year. If you've established a positive experience, something I can see how the volunteers could really encourage that form of giving.
Yeah, I would add on to what Bill noted, the importance to us that we continue to improve the event and make it that much more successful, that much more impactful for our community, and that much more of interest, you know, to our shoppers and our donors. So with that in mind, you know, my contact information, Bill's contact information is on the City of Ames Rummage Rampage site. And we encourage those that took part in the event to drop us a note, you know, let us know about their experience, offer any different ideas. We really appreciate that. Eyes and ears on the ground at the event, in order that then we can put that back into our planning process, which will begin in January.
Yeah. Okay. Wonderful timing there. And real quickly, Mary, I've met some of your interns. Do you have new interns in your sustainability program here at Iowa State coming on here in the next few weeks, or do you have some of your experienced interns again?
So, Pat, that's a great question. That will be a lot of what I will be working on in the next few weeks. School starts at Iowa State University on August 23rd. So we are gearing up to begin and to start planning events, to start putting together newsletter pieces. And we are at Iowa State this year getting together our international certification we do every 3 years for sustainability certification called STARS. And so that'll be a lot of what we're working on. And to your point, yes, I do have my graduate student that was actually featured. Her master's project was featured on our Earth Day celebration broadcast. Hannah Bartle will be with us again this year. But other than Hannah, we have a whole new crew of interns coming on. Three of them were here over the summer, just started this summer, and they were able to take part in Rummage Rampage. But then we're still doing a little bit more hiring here before the school year begins. And then we're excited to jump into projects. And of course, we would be remiss not to mention the City of Ames is in the middle of our climate action planning process. Yeah. And so many things we are reviewing, getting ready for, and getting excited to put into place.
Okay, a lot to look forward to. Final words, Mr. Schmidt?
If anyone has any questions on what to get rid of or how to get rid of items, you can reach us at the Resource Recovery Plant, 515-239-5137. We are certainly pushing our glass recycling program, the yellow bins around the community at the grocery stores, and our food waste diversion, where people can bring their organics to our plant, and we will recycle.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director for Iowa State University and the City of Ames, and Bill Schmidt, Resource Recovery Superintendent. Have a great weekend, folks. Thank you.
Thank you. You too.
Phenology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. The first cicada of summer or the last flock of barn swallows in the autumn. are noted in a journal for future reference and comparisons from year to year. And as Lee Searles of Marshalltown writes, phenology is the study of the natural cycles in the lives of living animals and plants. Today's phenology is about badgers. Badgers are short-legged omnivores, so they live on animals and plants. Badgers are in the family Mustelidae, which also includes river otters, weasels, ferrets, and polecats. Badgers weigh between 20 and 24 pounds. A distinctive white stripe runs from the badger's nose over its head to the nape of its neck. Many people think badgers got their name because their black and white face looks like a badge. In North America, the young are usually called kits, while the terms male and female are generally used for the adults. A badger's home is called a set with two T's, set. The fur is yellowish-gray, long, very thick, and the skin is loose-fitting. The badger is somewhat flat, furry mammal that spends most of its time beneath the ground. It digs through soil to make a home for itself, to find food, and to escape enemies. It is a formidable adversary if cornered, but it's not the brawler it is reputed to be. In fact, the badger is often quite tolerant of other animals. It will even share its own den with red fox. Its den is oval in design, about 12 inches across and 8 to 10 inches thick. Often these dens appear along roadsides in Iowa. Male badgers patrol a circuit of 15 miles or so. Along the way, he will construct a series of dens for sleeping. Badgers mate in August or September. After the eggs are fertilized, the embryos develop slightly, then lie dormant for several months. In late winter, they begin developing again. The babies or kits, usually three, are born between March and June in grass-lined dens 2 to 6 feet beneath the ground. They have fur, but their eyes remain shut for 4 to 6 weeks. The mother takes care of them by herself until they leave the den in the fall. Another interesting detail is where you see badgers, like our Milford Township, northeast of Ames. You will also find remnant populations of jackrabbits, a species of greatest conservation need in Iowa. It is noted that jackrabbits like to use abandoned badger dens for their families' needs. Badgers are found over most of Iowa except in the heavily forested northeast. They are nocturnal creatures. During cold weather, they keep to their burrows, probably in a state of dormancy. Badgers do not hibernate, but they do sleep most of the winter away in their underground burrows. They prefer open prairie, but will also make their homes in farmland. Their presence is becoming increasingly rare as grassland habitat is converted to row crops. They were once killed for their fur, which was used to make coat linings and paintbrushes. The badger feeds primarily on mice, ground squirrels, and gophers. In fact, it is the only predator that can dig out the deep burrowing pocket gopher. Badgers are also fond of snails, grasshoppers, bird eggs, honey, insect larvae, and snakes. Not many animals will tackle a badger. The badger's biggest enemies are people and dogs. And that is our phenology for today about badgers in Iowa. I hope you get to see one. Theme music is from John Barleycorn, Must Die by Traffic. This is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOY Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames. Become a member or find the donate button at khoifm.org. A local talk airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Fridays at 89.1 FM. So tell your friends far and wide, KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org, and hit that play button. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to the website khoifm.org and find the yellow donate button. KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Thank you, Local Talk producers Ursula Rudenberg and Lynn Carey. And thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday report. And thank you, engineer Mike Murphy. And thanks to our guests, Carolyn Raffensperger, Mary Rankin, and Bill Schmidt. And I have been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard were The Doors, Hyacinth House, and Tell All the People from Soft Parade, Hyacinth House on L.A. Woman. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOY meaningful and possible. Keep the community and community radio. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. And see you again on the radio.